On Wednesday in DC somewhere?
We went out, Dan Bates was current date for that. Went out and had a dinner together.
Probably knows the place, seen pretty well there.
It's really cold, just icy cold.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to City Council. Before we begin the official part of the proceedings, each Wednesday morning, we ask a question of the people in this room and the folks who watch this on TV. The question is, how are the children? The reason that we ask that question is because we know that when the children are well, the community is well. In some countries, when adults pass each other, rather than asking each other, how are you, they do ask, how are the children? And what we do is we invite a person in each week to talk with us. And this morning we have a young woman named Nellie Kuitunen, and she's age 16 and goes to Reynolds High School. Nellie, could you please come forward? Thank you for being here, Nellie.
No problem.
So please tell the City Council report on what you would like us to hear.
I live in a neighborhood, and it's at 162nd, and I moved here from San Diego, California, in 1999. And when I first moved there, it was a nice, serene place. But I don't know who was responsible, but someone put a methadone clinic right across the street. And that neighborhood just started falling apart. And it's just gone bad. It's gone from bad to worse. And I go to Reynolds High School, and that's the only high school in the Reynolds District. And it's a very, very big school. It's very crowded. And yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Well, I think that says a lot. I was down visiting the legislature Monday and talking to them about the need for money for facilities, because a number of schools in the state are growing and they need more school space. And it's awfully hard to have small classrooms when you have kids crowded in because there are no more classrooms to send them to. So I think that's a very important thing, and I appreciate you coming in and talking about it this morning. And you talked about the methadone clinic. Did you see that as sort of the problem with in the neighborhood, that was sort of the cause?
Yeah. Most of my friends and my mom's friends don't, especially women, can't walk down the street without carrying like a pocket knife or something.
Wow. Well, I'm also the police commissioner, so I'll have a discussion with the police bureau about that. So thank you very much for coming in, Nellie.
No problem.
Let me give this young lady a hand. And thanks for the folks who brought her in. We appreciate that as well. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to the City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the communication.
Agenda item 139, request of Rachel Elizabeth to address Council regarding the development process.
I'm hoping that Sam Adams can show up too, because it's a PDOT issue that it would be really nice for him to be here.
I saw him out in the hall.
Is he out in the hall?
I saw him.
Okay.
Could you see if he's available? We'll just wait just a second.
I appreciate it.
sorry to keep you waiting.
That's okay.
Can you speak? Would you please state your name for the record?
Yes.
And you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Rachel Elizabeth. I'm a mother, and I'm also a real estate developer. I own the Rexall building and a vacant lot on the corner of Mississippi and Shaver, and I've owned my building for 17 years. I'm here today to ask the mayor and the city council members to revoke the 2 building permits that were issued to the Mississippi Lofts. A 3rd permit that pertains to the street frontage improvements has not yet been issued. These permits were issued on the basis of a private backroom deal between PDOT and the developer. This secret deal-making circumvented the public process and undermined the existing zoning code on the street. Code Title 17 requires that all new construction projects set their buildings back 2 feet from the lot line. This 2-foot dedication is critical because it allows us to have 12-foot sidewalks. Last summer at the Landmarks Commission hearing regarding the Mississippi Lofts, many neighbors, including myself, spoke of our concerns that the loft building was too big in its mass and scale and that it would overwhelm the 2-story streetcar era buildings. I also talked about how important it is to have a sidewalk that's wide enough to accommodate street trees, cafe tables, strollers, wheelchairs, and lots of people. It's equally important to have a street that is wide enough to safely accommodate bicycles, cars, buses, and trucks. On Mississippi Avenue, we are fortunate to have a 40-foot wide street. It is precisely this combination of wide streets and alleys, along with a stunning array of streetcar era buildings and a large inventory of vintage houses, that are the defining characteristics of the historic Mississippi Avenue Conservation District. Title 17 is the most elegant solution for infill development. What is the point of having design guidelines or codes if the city of Portland fails to enforce them or if city bureaucrats set them aside arbitrarily? The Mississippi Lofts developers knowingly designed a building whose footprint is 2 feet too big. Their plans were originally denied by PDOT, and instead of redesigning and scaling back the building, Peter Wilcox, who is one of the developers, had a private meeting with Kurt Krueger, and what do you know? The Mississippi Lofts was granted an exception. And now a host of other developers are anxious to gain the extra free square footage of their projects too. The precedent has been set to ignore the code, the guidelines, and the neighbors. I want the city to stop making private deals with developers, and I want Title 17 enforced. That means a 2-foot setback from the lot line that extends the full height of the front of every new building on Mississippi. I have only like 3 more sentences. The land use review process has been set up to solicit neighborhood feedback. I do not understand why, in this case, a single planner decided to ignore huge neighborhood dissent and grant this project an exception to the zoning code setback requirement. Kurt Krueger of PDOT admitted he made a mistake. I don't want the city of Portland to approve a building permit that was the result of a mistake. I'm here today to urge the city to revoke the permits for this development and enforce Code Title 17 for every building on North Mississippi Avenue. Thank you.
Could I get a copy of your testimony? And we'll
pick it up here.
Oh, it's right here. And is your contact information here?
No, but I'll give it to you.
That'd be great. And just clarifying, it sounds like you have a concern about the 2-foot setback, but you oppose the development beyond that as well?
I don't oppose the development beyond that. I just want everyone on my street to observe the 2-foot setback, because there's about 25 more buildings slated for being built in the next 2 years.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the sole communication? We move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Does any person in this room wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Hearing none, please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Agenda item 140, adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the minor supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2006-07 winter budget adjustment process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm Casey Short, interim financial planning manager, here to give you a brief synopsis of the winter bump and answer any questions. This is one of three periodic adjustments to the budget we make during the year. It's the smallest of the three. It includes mid-year budget adjustments and performance reporting for halfway through the fiscal year. You'll see there's a good deal of performance reporting information in the winter bump analysis that was distributed to your offices last week, I believe, that you can go through on your own. I'm just going to talk today about the budget adjustments that are being requested in the winter bump and focus on the general fund. There are really no noteworthy actions in funds outside the general fund. There are six requests for draws on general fund contingency totaling $1,052,000. In addition, there's another $516,000 coming into the general fund, adding to contingency. That'll leave for the rest of the year a total of about $770,000 in the general fund contingency for a fund that's over $400 million. So it's thin, lasting through the rest of the year. Those are funds that are not otherwise spoken for. We have some things in reserve in the general fund contingency for specific items. I'll just quickly go through the six requests for draws on contingency, and then I'll be open to questions. There's a request from police for $314,000, adding 14 positions to civilianize background investigations and expedite the hiring process to get the process for hiring more police officers to run a little faster. There's a request from Commissioner Leonard, and I believe he wants to speak to this, for support for the Rose Festival of $250,000. We have in the bump implementing action to appropriate an additional $200,000 to the Regional Arts and Culture Council, pursuant to Council's action 2 weeks ago to match donations that are made to RAC. There are two items for staffing in BDS and in the Planning Bureau in response to the Measure 37 claims that came in the end of last year, right up against the deadline. And there's $82,000 for Project Respond. If there are any, well, before we get into questions, I'd like to see if anybody has anything to say. I think Commissioner Leonard was planning to say something about Rose Festival.
I was. I can do that now when I vote.
Okay. So that's my presentation. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Thank you. Was anybody signed up to testify on this?
No one signed up.
Okay. It's an emergency vote. Please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
I learned that the quickest way sometimes is to have budget requests outside the city go away is to ask them to provide financial details about why they need the request and to specifically identify where in their budget they have a shortfall that requires city funds to make up the difference. I actually expected the Rose Festival when they made the request to respond, and they did, to my delight. And in fact, this $250,000, which I'm pleased each of us on the council are supporting, is helping the Rose Festival meet not just the goals it has as a signature event annually in Portland, but this is actually the 100-year anniversary of the Rose Festival. And because of that and a number of outstanding events that will occur, they've asked for us to help meet their budget goals which I am very pleased to bring forward and to have the council support. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Under the regular agenda, please read the first item.
Item 155, authorized settlement agreement regarding Fire Station 1 relocation.
Mr. Sten?
Thank you, Mayor. This, just want to put on regular to, if there are any questions, this is the final settlement with the Portland Development Commission. Precedes many of the council members' time, but a few years back, PDC wanted to take a look at moving Fire Station 1 from its current location on NATO Parkway down a couple blocks to the Import Plaza block, and we explored that for several years. The Fire Bureau was more than willing to go along with that. It was essentially a decision that was not driven by any needs of the Fire Bureau, but was driven by a strategy PDC was working on to redevelop NATO Avenue. And the agreement that was signed between the Development Commission and the Fire Bureau essentially said that the Fire Bureau had a certain amount of money in the range of $12 million from the bond measure to redo the station. It was anticipated it would cost more to move it, and that if we explored moving it and for any reason the project did not happen, it was likely the inflated costs would exceed the $12 million or so that was in the bond. And so that's where we are today. And the Development Commission has agreed to pay the extra cost of the original project that really are come about because we've delayed and the price of steel and other things have gone up. So this is an amicable settlement. I think it's in line with what everybody agreed to on the front end. And at this point, it's back to the future. We're going right back to where Station 1 is now, and are going to get it rebuilt. There are still some questions about how to best integrate the station into Ankeny Plaza and a new Saturday market, and potentially, you know, I think everybody remains committed, as does the Fire Bureau, to a revitalized part of the waterfront there. And we basically said we're going to pretty much leave the exterior plaza of the building up to the community planning process, and there's just a lot of different ways to configure that, and we're going to not move on that part of the project until PDC decides the future of the area. But we're going to hopefully be underway very soon on a seismic upgrade and revitalization that are frankly way overdue. And I had not planned that. Chief Clum is here. I imagine someone from PDC is here, but we had not intended to make a presentation unless there were questions.
Are there questions from the commissioners? Is there anyone signed up to testify?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify on this matter? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I think it's worth noting that this is one of the rare times when an issue or an idea with a lot of passion was pursued and given due diligence and was not moved forward. So I want to just thank you, Commissioner Stinn, and PDC, and everyone else involved, that there's a lot of due diligence done with this, and the decision was to not pursue the building of a new fire station, but to remodel the old. And I think that's unusual in the 14-odd years I've been here, and I just wanted to note it. Thank you for it. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, one of the things I appreciate about this form of government is the kind of attention this issue got. Commissioner Stinn was, I happen to know, because I have particular interest in this issue because of professional reasons, former professional reasons, was reluctant to agree to the move in the first place, built in some frankly, conditions, if it didn't go through, that I don't know that I would have thought to put in. And sure enough, at the end of the day, he was able to hold the PDC to an agreement that he had the foresight to make sure had what I felt like were excellent protections for not only the general fund and the city, but for the firefighters of Portland. I never was very emotionally enthusiastic about the move for purely selfish reasons. I hopefully can envision myself one day walking along the waterfront as a little old man and pointing to people at the building and saying, that's where I got hired as a firefighter, and versus saying, that's where the Fire Bureau used to be. Now it's this other place. I'm really happy that it's staying there, and I'm enthused by the plans I've seen for the remodel, and I think all in all, this is an excellent example of how Portland works currently. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Well, I just want to be clear that as much as I like the notion that, at that point, I think former Commissioner Leonard's walk was not part of the decision-making process. And I did want to just say explicitly, and I want to thank Mayor Potter because he really helped me get through this piece, is that the decision not to proceed was strictly financial on PDC's part. It was too expensive, and at some point you have to say, great idea, but just not worth the money. And that's, I think, what Mayor Potter helped me in saying. So this is the last chapter in this one, I hope, and glad to vote aye.
Potter.
And I support this because I think in the long run, it not only serves the citizen better, but I think it's going to save the city money to use in other areas that we can help redevelop an area of our old town and River District that really need the help. So I vote aye. Please read the next item.
Item 156, amend city's 2007 legislative package and authorize the Office of Government Relations to support state legislation designed to enhance the collective bargaining rights of public safety personnel by allowing them to bargain issues exclusively related to their safety, which may include staffing levels.
Commissioner, did you want to take the lead?
Please. Thank you, Mayor. Anybody watching, as some of our wonkish citizens are apt to do, the council agendas the last couple of weeks must be scratching their head trying to figure out the various iterations that this proposed resolution has taken. And I think it's important for the public to understand and for me to explain how this last iteration has evolved to the point that it has. I originally wrote a resolution about 3 weeks ago that said that the city of Portland would amend its legislative package to actually endorse and support a specific piece of legislation in the legislature that purports to give the rights to firefighters and police officers the ability to bargain, to talk about with their employer issues relating to their safety as it is impacted by staffing levels. For a variety of reasons, I know that is a real issue. I've been to a number of firefighter and police officer deaths in my career directly relating to the lack of appropriate levels of staffing, and it's something I feel strongly about. When I began shopping that around, as one is want to do when you want to pass something here in the building, two of my colleagues agreed to sign on, in addition to myself. A fourth said that he could support it if the wording was changed from supporting the legislation to staying neutral. I've been in the legislative process much longer than just my tenure on the council, and so I look for collaboration and compromise and support where I can. And based on that conversation, I went back and rewrote the resolution to say that the city of Portland would stay neutral on the issue of this specific legislation currently in the legislature being debated that allows firefighters and police to bargain over their safety. I met with the mayor. The mayor expressed to me he could not support that. And so with four co-signers, it went forward to last week's agenda to be discussed. One of the original supporters of my proposal happened to be out of town that day. The mayor was out of town as well, so there were three of us here. When one of the original co-sponsors said on reconsideration he could not support the legislation, I may be a lot of things, but not having the ability to count is not one of them. I realized I didn't have three votes. So I came to the council and basically said that I was going to withdraw the resolution pending this week, and that I intended at that point to have a resolution before council that actually did what I wanted to do in the first place, support efforts by firefighters and police officers to be able to talk to their employers about their safety. In that debate, in what ended up to be a debate, Chief Rosie Sizer came forward, and I think she's here today. If I'm not, there she is behind a pillar, and made some observations about what it was in particular she was concerned about in the bill, in the legislature. I don't agree that was a an interpretation that I could agree with. Notwithstanding that, her concerns specifically here were not that firefighters and police could bargain about their safety, that she, in essence, thinks that's an important thing for employees to be able to do, to bargain actually about life and death issues that may affect them in their workplace, but rather the bill had been written in such a way as to actually go further than allowing firefighters and police to bargain their safety, but also bargain things such as transfers, and routine personnel decisions that may impact workload that are management and not safety issues. Again, I didn't necessarily agree with that interpretation, but I listened. And again, with the idea of trying to find cooperation and collaboration, I left that council meeting, worked closely with Commissioner Sten, who frankly is more objective about this issue than I am, and helped me craft what you see before you today. And I want to make sure that we today are debating what this says and not what somebody thinks this says or not something that was written 2 weeks ago or not some bill in Salem. We are debating a resolution that says that we support, as a council, the rights of public safety personnel to bargain issues, and I'm quoting, exclusively related to their safety, which may include staffing levels. One of the whereases, I won't read the whole resolution, but one of the whereases that Commissioner Sten helped me craft to address the concern raised by Chief Sizer here a week ago today says this: whereas assignments, transfers, and other routine personnel decisions made by management are not safety issues. In other words, this council will not support legislation that is written that it gives the rights to firefighters and police officers to bargain over issues such as transfers or workload issues. This has been written narrowly to only give support by this council of efforts in the legislature to pass legislation that would allow a firefighter or police officer to talk to their employer and not be charged with violating the collective bargaining law about those issues that could affect whether or not they go home at the end of their shift, which I think is fair and right, and I would hope each of us here would agree is an important thing for us to embrace. So I hope that this discussion today confines itself to what this actually says and not something else. Thank you.
Mr. Sten, did you want to? Okay.
Can we?
Yes.
Hear from?
Want to hear from?
Director of Human Resources and the Police Chief?
Director of Human Resources, Chief, also City Attorney. And, well, I guess we'll have Ken Rust after that.
Okay. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. This feels a little bit like deja vu all over again, so I'm going to be somewhat redundant in what I had to say last week, but recognize there are two members who weren't here last week.
And I hope you also recognize this is not the same resolution we discussed last week.
I guess I'm a little bit confused, and I applaud your effort to tailor a resolution more closely to what you want it to say. But essentially, what we're talking about is a bill at the legislature that may, at some point, if it passes, become labor law in the state of Oregon. So,
well, Chief Sizer, with all due respect, we are not debating that. We are debating resolution number 156. We're not debating a bill in the legislature. And what this resolution speaks to is specifically the issues I just outlined. And if the bill in Salem does the things that you testified to last week, we do not support that.
Well, Commissioner Lane, with all due respect, we're talking about a resolution that directly affects a position we take in our legislative agenda. So if we could let the Chief speak to her concerns about what could become labor law in Oregon, I would appreciate it.
Okay. And I just, I'll just quote the bill. I'm sorry, Commissioner, but it covers staffing levels and safety issues that have a potential impact on the on-the-job safety and the workload of employees. The Portland Police Bureau has two bargaining units that are strike prohibited. The Portland Police Association, covering officers, sergeants, detectives, and criminalists, and the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association, covering lieutenants, captains, and commanders. Similarly, the bill will cover dispatchers and call takers at the Bureau of Emergency Communications and in the county, corrections officers in the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. Senate Bill 400 would cover an enormous breadth of the issues undertaken by the Portland Police Bureau. These issues include, but are not limited to, the uniforms we wear, the vehicles we drive, and other equipment to include least lethal and less lethal weapon systems. Much of the training that police officers receive, the creation or dissolution of divisions, staffing levels within each Portland Police Division and on each shift, staffing levels for a variety of tactical operations to include search warrant and cert operations, and a variety of policies to include the Police Bureau's use of force policy. Senate Bill 400 is being portrayed as an expression of concern for safety. Providing a safe work environment for employees is already an inherent and critical part of our decision-making process and a top priority. In my 22-year career with the Portland Police Bureau, with one possible exception, I cannot recall a safety-related concern that was not immediately addressed through a safety committee or through cooperation between management and labor. The one possible exception is the current 800 megahertz radio system, which has several dead spots within the boundaries of the city of Portland, and these dead spots have not been resolved, although not through lack of effort. No radio system is flawless, even the most expensive. And I would have you witness the over $600 million radio system that's being proposed for the state of Oregon in the governor's budget. You might be interested to know that the vast majority of safety incidents testified about in the Senate committee hearing on Senate Bill 400 occurred or were framed around the State Department of Corrections. If there is a problem with the DOC, shouldn't the resolution be to fix the DOC? Similarly, other testimony around this bill framed it as a vehicle for getting more cops on the street. I heartily support that, but also recognize through the budgeting process, more cops on the street mean lesser municipal services in other areas. Under current state law, if a collective bargaining agreement is in effect, no unilateral change in a mandatory subject of bargaining may be made unless agreement is reached at the bargaining table or 90 days have passed. Senate Bill 400 would require bargaining of the aforementioned items or issues or delay in the implementation past 90 days. As one labor leader told me last week, demand to bargain letters would be flying if Senate Bill 400 is passed. Some of the issues may result in binding arbitration based on labor associations and management's last best offer. One thing that has been made clear to me during my tenure as police chief is how difficult it is to effect change. Change is difficult even under current labor law. Change would be more difficult under a new law. Change would come more slowly and probably at greater cost. And finally, I would like to make very clear that I am not anti-union. I have been a member of a labor union virtually my whole adult life. I like Robert King and respect his role as president of the Portland Police Association. I believe the City Council can identify many and different ways to show its support for their public safety personnel rather than to support Senate Bill 400. I believe the bill is too broad in its current state for the city of Portland.
I guess, Chief, this is deja vu because I don't think this panel heard what I said last week, and I assume it's because I was inarticulate. The challenge I tried to present last week was one that I think the political reality is that this bill is likely to pass in Salem. As I've listened to both sides, I've heard both sides say that they don't believe the extremes are likely to happen, and they also don't believe that the extremes should happen, which are two different things. What I continue to hear from our side on management is a list of coulds. You know, this could happen, that could happen, the other thing could happen. Well, another thing that could happen is it's going to pass. And so what I said last week was, and that has nothing to do with whether this council weighs in or not. I mean, let's cut to the chase. I mean, the Salem is not on hold to see what our position is on this issue. They don't care that much. The votes are being waged in different ways. So what I tried to frame last week was, could we come up with a scenario that perhaps we could present as a united front with our management and labor in the tradition of Portland labor management that tried to parse this down a little bit, tried to clarify. And it appears that nobody put any effort into that, that the effort was to come in with another list of how the sky could fall. And so Randy and I did write up a resolution that does not say we support Senate Bill 400 written as it is. It says we would support a bill that got to what we think the heart of the fire and police union's legitimate arguments are. And frankly, I think some of the pieces that they probably successfully push right now in arbitration is just not lined up, but limit at least the majority of coulds that you put forward. And with all due respect, to hear the list again doesn't really get me anywhere. It's I get that those things could happen under 400. I think this council is passing on a chance to try and weigh in with a more thoughtful approach that perhaps we could all bring unanimously. But it appears that the goal is to, you know, to have the debate that's going to happen in Salem anyway. So I mean, that leaves me having to figure out a way to vote on this exactly, but that had been my hope, was that we could come in and say, you know, here's some ways that we would recommend changing this bill. I mean, as it is now, you're playing this like an arbitration. With all due respect, Ms. Deckard, you're playing it a win or lose, and there, you know, 400 passes, the sky falls. That's what you're arguing. If it doesn't pass, we stay where we are. Well, you know, the argument that I'm looking for in this resolution is what is some middle ground on this thing. And, you know, I don't think staffing levels, I mean, I don't think workload levels, I don't think the routine transfers, I don't think Robert was lying when he said he didn't intend to grieve those, and I don't think he was lying when he said that since you don't intend to grieve those, if we could work on amending the legislation to clearly exclude those, you wouldn't mind. And he said, no, I wouldn't. So, but instead, we're basically coming in and saying, okay, we don't want to amend this thing at all, we don't want to do any work on it, we just want to do this list of all the things that could happen. And so that's my frustration.
Can I ask a clarifying question for you, Linda? I just want to confirm through your eyes what I see in that this particular resolution that, and I was gone last week, that is before us, takes a position on an issue. It does not take a position on a House bill or a Senate bill. Do you agree with that interpretation?
Yes, I think that's clear in the resolution, that it's not directed at a particular bill. I mean, someone could take it and use it, I suppose, in lobbying effort to support some bill or other, but it doesn't take a position on a bill.
And to be clear on that point, Commissioner Adams, I wrote this with Commissioner Sten thinking that it would be used as a tool by a government relations staff to draft amendments to Senate Bill 400 to address the very concerns you raised last week, Chief Sizer. So I'm just disappointed to hear what I'm hearing today, because this was drafted actually to restrict it more than what it was originally drafted to do, which was originally to actually support Senate Bill 400. This has been dramatically changed to make sure that we're all talking about the same thing and we're not having disagreements that aren't healthy. And I don't think this is a healthy disagreement, because I think we're having two complete conversations. We're having a conversation about Senate Bill 400 as it's written, and I'm having a conversation about a resolution that essentially empowers the city to amend Senate Bill 400 to take out the concerns that you raise.
And Linda, do you agree, in addition to what you just said in the first answer to my question, that that is also a scenario in which this legislation, this particular resolution, could be used to help amend the bill in Salem?
I mean, and that's a government relations matter, but I certainly believe that, you know, they would take it and use it as directed by the council, as expressing the council's position.
I would like to weigh in on this matter as the police commissioner. I'd like to go to the issue that was at the core of this, and that's around officer safety. The Portland Police Bureau does have a safety committee that is composed of rank and file and management that looks at safety issues for Portland police officers. There is also regular meetings under labor management committees between administration and unions over all issues. The current law that the way it is constructed at the state level is that there is requirement for a substantial and direct impact on the safety of employees. What the state law does, and it's not addressed by this resolution, is that it changes the bar. It moves it from substantial and direct, which means now, to one that has a potential impact on safety or workload and workload. I wanted to just, I looked up the word potential because I thought that's an interesting word that's been used to describe this new bar. And the first definition under potential was that it's possible as opposed to actual, that it's not existing, but it has the possibility to exist. That's a different bar than saying that there's a substantial and direct impact. And that was one of my major concerns with this particular legislation, is that it changes the bar in terms of what is a requirement for the city and the unions to bargain. All of this is based on a basic question, is there a problem currently in the city of Portland with the issue of safety of fire or police officers? I have not heard it. So in terms of how it affects the city of Portland, I think that because it changes the bar for bargaining, that it will impact the city of Portland. And that's where my concern lies. So it, to me, is not an issue of safety. We take care of our people. Yes, there is an issue with the 800 system. We are in the process of working across all the bureaus of the city to try to come up with a comprehensive solution to our communications, public safety communications. And in fact, we're going to be making quite a large investment in it. And so even that is being addressed. But it is a money issue, and is also being able to develop an effective, collaborative, interoperable system. And that's the goal, and that's where we're moving towards. So from my perspective, this isn't just about the particular resolution. It's also the other part of the only legislation I'm aware of, which are two, House Bill 2404 and Senate Bill 400, that go to this specific issue, and the subsection which changes the bar from substantial and direct impact, which is an actual event, to a potential impact, which is one that is possible but not actual. So I'm concerned that this places the city in jeopardy in terms of its ability to negotiate fairly and honestly with its unions.
Well, at the risk of repeating myself for the fourth time, this resolution does not weigh in on any particular legislative bill. This resolution states a position by the city that can actually be used to craft amendments to address the very concerns you just raised, Mayor Potter.
The League of Cities has actually crafted an amendment to, rather than as bargaining, is to require sit-down discussions between labor and unions at least every 3 months.
Well, why don't you just extend that to wages and holidays and vacations? What's the difference? We're nice to our employees. They don't need a pesky collective bargaining law.
What is the problem we're solving?
Exactly.
I'm asking you is what is the
problem?
Well,
let me just say, it is when you have the right to collectively bargain in the private sector, there are no restrictions such as we're discussing here. Electricians, carpenters, laborers sit down and bargain on any subject. It is only in Oregon public employee collective bargaining law that there are any restrictions at all on anything that can be talked about. That is unusual. What this resolution seeks to say is to allow public employees, police officers and firefighters in Portland, to sit down and talk about only those issues that relate to their safety exclusively, and does not include, by the words of this resolution, which I hope you've actually read, Mayor Potter, that does not include assignments or transfers or routine personnel decisions made by management and are not safety issues. That's what it says. You're debating Senate Bill 400.
No, I'm debating you, because what you're saying is that there's a problem. This allows for the police unions to sit with management. They already do that. They've got
Mayor
safety
Potter,
committees. They've got labor management committees. We've got a state statute that provides for that.
Mayor Potter, let me point out something to you. Portland isn't synonymous with the state of Oregon. We may have good relationships with our employees, but this is a bill in the legislature that affects every jurisdiction from the southeast corner to the northwest corner of the state and every point in between, that those employees don't enjoy the same relationship with their councils or their fire districts or their sheriff's office that our employees do. I hope you understand that this is a bill that affects firefighters and police throughout Oregon, not just Portland, Oregon.
Well, you should have crafted it rather than saying this is about our unions being able to sit down with the police and fire.
I should have crafted what?
That. But initially, that's how you started out, by saying this is about public safety. This is about protecting our officers,
yes,
and firefighters.
Yes, that they have the right to talk about it.
And that they have a right to talk about
yes.
it. So what does this solve for Portland?
It codifies in statute from this point on, if this council changes and that union leadership changes, that employees have the inherent right to sit down and talk with their managers, their employers, about issues that could affect their safety, which I think is a fundamental human right, not just a right firefighters and police should have.
And you're saying that the current statute does not provide for that?
Obviously not. There's a bill to change it.
Well, I mean, the current law says you can negotiate.
Then why do you oppose doing? Why do you oppose changing the statute along the lines I've outlined? If you think it's already there,
because the word potential is a much more creative.
You're debating Senate Bill 400. That we're debating this resolution. This resolution says not potential.
Well, I think it's
But I think that's the issue at play.
I think it's important to go back to the context of how one raises these issues, because they can't strike. Police and fire have to go to binding arbitration. All this allows them to do, if you take out, and this is what I'm focused on, as the fire commissioner, I don't fear them bringing up anything. Anything that an employee thinks is a potential to their danger, if they can take it through their union process and they believe it's serious enough to bring to the bargaining table, I want to hear it. I don't want to assume that Chief Sprando's thought of everything, or and certainly not me. I think we want to hear it. What this allows them to do is to take a potential issue and bring it to the bargaining table. What is the end result of that bargaining table? The end result of the bargaining table is a very, very risky arbitration if we can't reach agreement. And I have no reason to believe in the real world that the fire and police unions are going to bet their whole arbitration on the kind of things that you guys are lining up, because arbitration is an either-or category. Now, the danger based on this, unless you fear the discussion of somebody saying, I want to call this potential safety and think an arbitrator is going to see through, is not going to see through something that is not, is if they can bring this into day-to-day transfers and other pieces and grieve things based on the contract language to basically make it hard to run the Bureau. That is the issue. I am yet to actually hear, Mayor, you're the first time I've heard anybody argue the argument aggressively that they don't want to hear potential issues. I haven't heard the Chief say that. I haven't heard the Chief of the Fire say that. I haven't heard the League of Cities say that. What I've heard people say is, here's a laundry list of things that could happen on a day-to-day basis if this passes, which is why I was trying to get at last week the question of, is there a way to agree? And I've heard the unions agree that that's not the issue. But given the fact that you can bring up a potential issue in a debate, I mean, it should not scare us, because if we are right on our analysis, if we are right and the officers are safe, we will prevail at arbitration. It's not like if they can bring it up, they can suddenly impose something. They have to make an overall argument on a package. And if you are risky in a package, you're not going to win the package. And so I really think that this is... Yeah, the danger in the Senate Bill 400 would be in the disruption of the day-to-day ability to manage it. We should not fear giving employees room to talk about things in a broad arbitration or in a broad negotiation that takes place every 3 years and at the end of the day is about their work conditions.
It seems like, in my experience on 9 years on the council, negotiations include a laundry list of items. Every time a contract comes up, there's many, many items that are being negotiated. And this is going to sort of, in my opinion, open it up for more potential issues. And so people put in issues knowing they're not going to get anywhere on them, but that they become takeaways and things that get you to a settlement. And so that, that's the concern I have, is that we're adding a potential whole another laundry list of issues about related to potential impacts. And I wanted to ask Yvonne Deckard, because you wrote to us on February 9th a memo concerned about, again, House Bill 2404, for example, saying these are issues that could be could raise a demand or a grievance for bargaining, such as redeploying school police officers could be challenged as potentially increasing officer workload for those officers who don't respond to schools. And more important to me is the impact on return to work programs. I mean, 80% of the voters just recently weighed in. They want to see, among other things, you know, more aggressive return to work policies. And you're concerned here that there's a potential, or that it could be argued by the police association that return to work essentially endangers the safety of officers by putting people in jobs that, you know, aren't fully capable of performing at the level of non-disabled police officers. So I wanted to ask you, I mean, those concerns, you still have those concerns, and I wanted to ask you also the language that was added to the resolution, whether that mitigates any of your concerns about those type of scenarios, interfering with return to work policies or redeployments.
Yvonne Decker, Director for the Bureau of Human Resources. The way the bill is written today, the terminology potential impact on safety or workload, I agree with the chief, is very broad. And whether we're in contract negotiations, certainly when we're in contract negotiations, issues come up and we vet them through negotiations. But if the type of programs that you're talking about or that I've mentioned in this memo would certainly occur outside of contract negotiations, what it would mean is that the union would still be able to give us a demand to bargain for it before we could implement, even though we're not into contract negotiations. So we would, once we get a demand to bargain, under the current language, the way the bill is written, we would have an obligation to bargain, and we would have an obligation to bargain potential impact, and we would have an obligation to bargain over workload and staffing, as you know, as well as safety. I was here last week and heard, you know, Robert's testimony, and what I know is that anytime we've gone to contract negotiations, if safety issues have come up, we've never refused to bargain over those, whether it's during contract negotiations or not. I mean, Commissioner Stinn is correct. Any issues that have come up, we've been able to bargain over them. When you have programs like Return to Work, you know, Robert is very reasonable, and I haven't had a lot of experience with Ken Burns, but my experience with Ken is that he's very reasonable. But they also have e-boards, they have memberships, they have an obligation to represent. And Ken or Robert or Susan Skites, as far as 911, may decide as a union rep that is not something that they want to bring forward. But their e-board could you know, ask them to bring it forward anyway, or their membership could ask them to bring it forward anyway, and they would be obligated to do so.
Can I focus you in right there on what you said? Because I think that I'm not sure that there's dispute over the primary statement you just made, which is that were the bill to pass, it could force you and management to bargain over transfers, routine transfers, sure, assignments, and workloads. That's why I continue to see that one of the opportunities that this council has that it appears to be passing on in favor of the broad rhetoric that's going on in both sides down there would be to bring our police union and our fire union, which are the biggest in the state, into a unified position with us that says we could support legislation if it nailed all the things that are in your memo and took them off of consideration. And I have at least haven't had the long conversation with Ken, but have had the conversation with Robert to say that is not their intent. And so I guess this, I'm not going to repeat myself again, that's what I was hoping for last week, was to try and, it's my personal political prediction that this bill is going to pass. It's my personal political prediction that's going to pass whether or not this council weighs in either way. It's also my personal sense that if this council and its unions, which would be the only one in the state that's coming in lockstep, came in and said, you know what, we're not as scared about people putting potential safety issues on the table, because you know what? We let them do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. What we are scared of is this laundry list of what ifs, and we've got a couple of sentences here that we're presenting jointly with fire and police unions that clarify that that is not the intent. I think we'd have a shot at passing that, because I think that the two sides probably could get the bill amended. I doubt the two sides splitting are going to change the fate of the bill. And so that again, is my intent in sponsoring this resolution, which, you know, I think was probably not as clear as I intended it to be based on today's conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Commissioner Stan, I was asked to comment on the bill as it's written, and that's what I've done in this memo. You know, if
you've done that articulately, and I think that I agree with many of your points.
Right, and if the city through governmental relations worked on an amendment to the bill, until I see that amendment, you know, I'm not sure what the impact of that would be. But if we were working to amend the bill the way in the direction that I hear that the conversation is going, then that would represent certainly a different scenario for the city. So right now, I'm commenting on the bill as it's written today and what the impact would be on the city if that was to pass as is.
Well, and I just, you know, I could be... It feels to be a little bit of a circle going on, and I'll be quiet, because I just have a premonition that Dan Bates is going to call you and say, what would that sentence look like?
Well, and if that happened, I could certainly and would be certainly willing to sit down and work with Dan on what that sentence would look like, and then council has to decide if that's the direction that they want to go. But my phone right today, no one's called. I'm only faced with the language as it exists right now, and so that's the only thing I can deal with is what's in front of me.
I wanted to ask Chief Sizer, have you encountered any concerns from the union about return to work policies to date? I mean, we are, I know, under Mayor Potter's leadership, getting more aggressive about that. Have there been any concerns expressed about the safety of street officers because of using officers with some form of disability in the workplace?
No, I haven't. And we've identified positions for them where any physical limitations would not have an impact on them nor any street officers. So that has gone very smoothly.
Then I wanted to ask Linda Ming, the whereas that Commissioner Leonard and Sten added says, whereas assignments, transfers, and other routine personnel decisions made by management are not safety issues. Does that have, if we pass this, does that have any policy impact vis-a-vis us and our bargaining units?
As opposed to in Salem? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Between current statute and proposed change?
Well, okay, you know, let's say something passes in Salem, but we have gone on record with this resolution, maybe if we took the whereas and made it a resolved, does that give us, and I'd want to hear from the unions about this before we would do something like that, but does that give us this is the council's position, that these issues are not safety issues, realizing that, you know, whatever happens in Salem could interfere with that ultimately. But
I don't believe it would change the meaning of the statute. If a statute passed with the current broad language in the statute, I don't think the council's interpretation of that language in a resolution would have any impact on the way the courts would interpret that statute or the arbitrators would interpret that statute when it was being enacted. the council can't create legislative history for a state statute.
No, I understand. I guess so. I'm just saying when we sit down at the table, could we use this as a policy statement, realizing that once it gets out of our hands into the courts, who knows?
You could probably use it. I'm not sure it would take you very far.
Yeah, I mean, Commissioner Sossaman, if you're asking whether or not, if I'm sitting at the bargaining table and I say what council's policy is not to have us negotiate over assignments, transfers, routine personnel decisions, and therefore we're not going to talk about it, I would imagine we get a ULP. I would imagine we get an unfair labor practice because the state statute would give the unions the right to talk.